Welcome to the grand unveiling of Exchange Server 2016. Today we'll introduce you to the newest member of the Exchange family and give you an end-to-end view of what's new. I'm John Orton, Director of Exchange Marketing. Your other tour guides today are Kip Fern, Program Manager Lead for the Modern Attachments team, Alan Filish, Outlook Anova Product Manager, Rocky Messing, VP of Customer Solutions from Equivio, and Kareem Batish, who goes by many titles, Group Program Manager of the Exchange Mailbox Intelligence team, father of Outlook Web Access, father of Dragons, inventor of OAS MIME, the brains behind Exchange Web Services, the creator of the Exchange Managed Store, and killer of every Exchange API not worthy of our developers. As you can tell, we wrote our own intros. Our goal today is to satisfy your curiosity about what's in this release, but we only have 75 minutes, so I'm sure you'll be hungry for more. Throughout the presentation, we've got pointers to sessions where you can get double-click info. We got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. But first, the obligatory caveat slide. This is a futures presentation, and the product is still baking, so our plans may change as we approach release. The details of pricing and licensing are still to be determined. Some of the screenshots you see have been enlarged to show texture, and don't try these demos at home. Use only as directed, et cetera. Here's our vision for Exchange Server 2016. You'll hear about specific investment areas in a moment, but this is what we plan to ship in a nutshell. We want this release to be the best performing and most reliable version of Exchange ever, with fault tolerance and self-healing capabilities baked into the system. For that, we need an architecture that is rock solid, an evolution and refinement of what we shipped in Exchange 2013 with an emphasis on simplicity. We want this to be a messaging foundation that not only meets your organization's current needs, but as you think about the future and during the lifetime of your Exchange 26 deployment, your future might be 100% on premises, or you might have a merger, an acquisition, or a partial move to the cloud. So hybrid capabilities should be baked in and native. It should also let you keep all your user mailboxes on premises while tapping into the cloud to enhance that environment. And finally, we want it to integrate with other products like never before to deliver outstanding user experiences. Gone are the days when it was good enough to just innovate within the product boundaries of Exchange. The next wave of improvements to productivity require Exchange to be integrated with other technology like never before. And this is not just about other Microsoft products, but integration with third-party apps and services is also vital. The story of Exchange 2016 begins in the cloud. As most of you know, we have one Exchange team delivering innovation to cloud and on-premises. We have a release process that lets us light up features in Office 365 and then learn from usage of the features and feedback there, then iterate and improve them, and finally to package up features for on-premises release. And here's how it works. When a feature has been developed and tested, it rolls out to Office 365, first in a Microsoft dog food environment, and then to early adopter customers, and finally to the customers in general. And feedback begins pouring in, telemetry on usage, feedback from end users and from IT, support data and so on, from a base of millions of mailboxes worldwide. We use that feedback to improve the feature, and that process of refinement continues week by week, month by month, based on real usage. And now as we approach the release of Exchange Server 2016, an important phase of validation begins, because although Office 365 has big scale and great coverage in terms of geography, size of businesses and industries, in terms of server hardware, topology, storage, et cetera, it's not diverse at all. In fact, just the opposite. So in order to bring this release on premises, there's a lot of validation we need to do to make sure that it's on-prem ready. And so that process includes test topologies in labs, automation, et cetera, also early adopter programs, Microsoft dogfooding on premises. And since the launch of Exchange 2013, we've been refining and improving that process, and we're expanding that effort in this release. So in summary, many of the features that you'll see today will be familiar if you've been following along what's happening with Office 365, and that's by design. The back-end code, like transport and mailbox, has been proven at scale, hardened and refined, and the end-user features we're delivering have been born in the cloud. That's why we expect this to be a rock-solid release, both in terms of performance and reliability, but also in the completeness and usefulness of the features that we're delivering. Here's where we are in that journey toward launch. After 2+ years in that Office 365 innovation loop, we're in the process of on-premises validation. The first Exchange 2016 mailbox was deployed back in November in a Microsoft on-prem dog food environment, and we have a few hundred brave souls at Microsoft already on Exchange 16 on-premises. We're ramping that on our way to 10,000 on-premises Microsoft dog food users by launch. In February, we kicked off a technology adoption program for customers and partners. This is all about putting the 2016 bits into production environment and getting feedback across diverse topologies. And the tap is expanding. So if you want to be part of the fun, you can swing by the expo floor, and we actually have the tap crew in the back that can tell you more about how you can participate. This summer, we're going to have a public beta. And then all of this culminates in a final release by the end of the calendar year. So today we'll tour 5 categories of innovation that make up Exchange Server 2016, starting with better collaboration, including a new approach to attachments that helps get rid of version control nightmares, a smarter inbox, one that's more personalized and more helpful, mobile productivity, making email on phones and tablets better so you can get more done on the go. And then specifically for IT, enhancements in the modern data center with architecture improvements that make it easier for you to run Exchange. And finally, security and compliance, expanding Exchange's built-in protection, legal and regulatory capabilities. Let's start with document collaboration. And the tools for collaborating on documents have come a long way, but most people still collaborate on documents by emailing them around. Why is this? Well, it is the simplest way to start collaborating. And sometimes it works out fine, but things can go sideways quickly whenever you have multiple people that need to be in a doc working at the same time, or when the group of people is large, or when people just make mistakes like replying out of order. So what starts well often ends badly. You got multiple versions of the document in your inbox. You have to rationalize and merge together a bunch of conflicting changes. It's no fun, especially when you're on a deadline. The tools to solve this problem are already available in SharePoint, but people have trouble remembering what the SharePoint URL is when they need to go and add a file, or they try it out, and then they get bitten by permissions problems, and they go back to what is easy and familiar, at least easy at the start. Wouldn't it be great if there were a way out of this, and one that didn't require people to learn an entirely new set of behaviors and be outside their inbox? Well, Kip Fern's going to show us how we're bringing Exchange together with other members of the Office family to solve this problem in an elegant way. And you've seen demos of this already, I'm sure, but Kip's going to give you more details about what specifically we're bringing on premises.
All right, thank you, John. Before I dive into the demo, I want to give you a peek at the infrastructure powering what you're about to see. I'm using a fully on-premise environment. That means it's an Exchange 2006 server talking to a SharePoint 2016 server, talking to an Office Web Apps 2016 server. And that's what powers the web versions of Word, PowerPoint, and Excel. To reiterate, this is 100% on-prem. And more specifically, the demo is off of some test boxes back in Redmond. And you're the first people to see this. So keep your fingers crossed. Okay. There's another deployment option as well, and it's on the right side of the screen. It looks very similar to the on-prem setup, except for one piece, and that's where the SharePoint documents are stored in the cloud instead of on-prem. So before I dive into the demo, I want to give everyone an overview. Sorry. Let me switch on over. Oops. So what I'm going to show you now is how we've made this complex collaboration so much easier for both the users who still send around classic attachments, as well as people who are starting to use SharePoint to collaborate more easily. And we all know most people still send around those classic attachments. But I'm one of those users that have run into enough problems with document merging and versioning where I'm putting most of my documents in SharePoint now. So let's take a look at how Outlook and OWA can make my life even easier to collaborate with others. So I'm running Outlook Desktop 2016 here, and I'm finalizing my presentation. I'm going to give a big talk at Ignite, and I want to get feedback from my team. My document is already on SharePoint, so I need to finish up my last thoughts before emailing it off to the team. So I'll look it over, okay. Yep, that looks good. Okay, here's what I need to do. Let's finish it up. That looks good, and I'm going to save it. Right, so back in Outlook, I'm going to bring up a draft of an email that I've prepared for my team already. And I'm going to go ahead and attach that document. Now, right away, you'll notice something new. You'll notice that we have a most recently used file list, or MRU for short. This MRU list shows me all the most recent files that I've touched both on my hard drive and in SharePoint. And so the odds that the file that you want to attach is pretty high that it's going to be there. As a matter of fact, our internal stats show that 90% of the files picked from the MRU are in one of the top three items. However, if you have a file that's not the most recent, you can certainly always browse your local PC, and you're also able to access other storage services that you've connected with Office. So let me go ahead and attach my presentation. First, you'll notice a new attachment style that's bigger and more descriptive, making it much easier to see more of the file name. Next, you'll notice that the SharePoint link document here looks and feels just like a classic traditional attachment, but it does have this cloud overlay icon on it. You see, we have this mantra. The mantra is that an attachment is an attachment is an attachment. It shouldn't matter to the user whether it was a classic attachment or one that was taken from SharePoint. They should all be treated the same. As a matter of fact, this even means that a SharePoint linked attachment will show up with that paperclip icon in your inbox, which makes it easy to identify and even filter on. But there's even more magic. One of the other big pain points when they copy and paste links into emails is permissioning, or specifically lack thereof. How many times do you receive a link in a document and you click on it and you get that, sorry, but you're not authorized to see this yet? Well, we've solved that problem for you too. Because when this email is sent, all recipients in the email are automatically permissioned to edit this document. And you can see that right here as well, where it clearly states that these recipients will be able to edit. And yes, you can easily switch this to change your permission to view only if you want as well. So I'll send that off. But remember this important fact. When the recipient receives this email with the linked SharePoint attachment, they'll be editing that single version on SharePoint. So you will not have to worry about all the confusion and merging problems that we've had with the past. So because of the power of Exchange, SharePoint, and Office working together, sharing has never been so easy and seamless. Now I'll switch to OWA. And we'll take a look at a more common scenario where people author their documents locally and then send them in the regular email. So now I'm at home, and I work 24/7, and I've been working hard on my 2016 product strategy, and I will get feedback as soon as possible from my team for a big executive meeting that's coming up. And because I'm at home, I'm going to use OWA. In this case, I've already created my document on my local hard drive, and I'm ready to send it off. But I know I want to collaborate on this, and so I don't want to have to deal with the merging and from my multiple team members coming in. So I have another draft ready to go. Oops. This could be the VPN connection. As I said, I'm connected to an actual test server back inside the firewall in Redmond. One downside of OWA is if you don't have an internet connection, it makes it tough. And just try reconnecting. All right. Okay, we'll see if that comes back in. So in OWA, if I go to attach a file, yep. Let's see. All right. We'll see how this goes. So when I go to attach a file, the options in OWA come up and let you. We'll give you two options here. So as I said, I have a file, I'm attaching it to my email, but I want to share it collaboratively. So OWA now presents me with an option to automatically upsell it into SharePoint for me. So when I click on that file, showing you the great error handling capabilities when you're disconnected. That's what this demo is all about. Try one more time. Yeah, I think we're in there. Let's try one more time here. There we go. All right. So you saw part of that flow where it's easy to be able to upsell a classic attachment to make it one of these SharePoint linked files, and you'll be able to send it off. Okay, so part of what we're doing is bringing all these features from Office 365 onto on-prem. As I said, this is working off of the servers back in Redmond. But one of the pieces also that we'll be showing here is being able to show both a classic attachment and one of these Kali docs working together. But on the receive side, what happens when I receive one of these emails here? On the receive side, I can go in, and in this case, I'm going to look at a classic attachment, and I get to view it in my side-by-side mode now. So when I'm viewing in my side-by-side mode, I get to see the context of the email in conjunction with the actual attachment itself. And I don't have to alt-tab separate windows around and getting all confused. And on top of that, when I want to reply to this message, we have a new edit and reply flow as well. So when I click edit and reply, what's happening is that a new attachment is being created, a new reply is being created, and they're being put together automatically for me. And I'm being able to actually edit my document still in my side-by-side view. So I can come on in here, I can make changes to the doc, and I can then send it on its way. So it used to be download the file, rename it, make your changes, reattach. Now it all happened with one click of a button, staying with that same browser session. And if that file was a shared link from a SharePoint file, it would be even better. Because using the power of the Office Web App Server, I'd actually be co-authoring on that document. I could also use the rich clients to edit that document as well. And as was just announced, I can either co-author on the Word file as well. So it really is great integration with all the Microsoft products when the network connection is working. All right. There are a couple other features that I'll just mention here, too. One of them is that a lot of times when you receive an attachment, you want to save it, right? But you want to save it to SharePoint. So we also make it very easy to save to SharePoint as well, where you'd be able to get a save to SharePoint link straight in your attachment, and that would, with one click, be able to save to SharePoint. So you don't have to deal with messy downloads and re-uploads anymore. And then there's one final feature as well. OWA is now smart to know how big the files are and what your limits are on your email servers. And so if you try to attach files that are too big, OWA will do one of two things. If you attach something more than 5 megabytes, it will suggest that you send it as a SharePoint linked file instead. And if it goes over your actual limits on your server, it will block you from attaching as a classic attachment, and you will only be able to send it as a linked SharePoint file. So no longer will you have any issues with large files. We'll be able to handle them all. So thank you very much. My time is now up, and I will introduce Kareem.
Thanks, Kip. There. And all right. When John asked me to come out and speak, I only agreed to talk about very deeply technical things. And so the first set of slides, the draft that I gave him, he said would cause nosebleeds, and so he was pretty unhappy with what I presented, so I've toned that down a little bit. And he instructed me to deliver something he called factoids. Introduce your area with factoids. I'm not quite sure what those are still, but this is my attempt to please my colleagues in marketing. And so we always talk about information overload. In a simple sense, a way to think about it is just more information than any person could possibly process arrives in our mailbox every day. A study McKinsey commissioned recently showed that people spend about 30% of their time at work dealing with mail. And then in addition to that near 30% time, people spend another 20% of their time looking for information they already have, whether it be mail or otherwise, or their colleagues have. Now, that's really interesting. We didn't really have a great way to map that to what we see in the Exchange Online Data Center. And we really are learning a lot from our users, from usage, from what we see in the cloud and how people use our service. We want to bring that to you in the form of a great version of Outlook 2016 and a great Exchange 2016 on-prem. What we see in Exchange Online is that about a quarter of our users, there's a broad range of them, get down to 0 messages in their inbox every single day. Is there anybody here who actually does that? Well, not 25%. Now, there's the other side, which are like the 10% folks. I call them hardcore pilers. They're people who never move messages, seldom delete things. They use read-unread to figure out what they're doing. That's it. How about those guys? Right? Any of those here? A lot more. Very nice, very nice. Now, there's this broad range of us in the middle. Some of us have some rules. We might move things to folders. We kind of look for them later. We're not sure where everything is. Most of us give up. What that's done is it's given birth to, here's my factoid, a cottage industry of self-help for email overload. There are something like 100 titles, most of them self-published on Amazon.com, which are just incredibly, incredibly convoluted. Some of them cover every single version of Outlook that we've shipped with a new revision of the book. So anybody in the audience write one of these books? I don't see a hand. Okay, I'm disappointed. I was going to throw a t-shirt out if someone said yeah. Now, I really want to take you to with me on a journey to show you where we're innovating in Outlook and OWASP to help users focus on what's important, work more efficiently, and get things done. Now, part of the learnings that we take from Exchange Online are really inspired by theories and science around decision making and cognition. But like those McKinsey studies, in the past we did these really slow, very large-scale studies, or we would do really deep, but ultimately anecdotal studies of what people were doing. We really didn't get a great representation of what people would do from place to place, region to region, job to job. And so we spent a lot of time instrumenting our code to understand users, and I'll walk you through one example. And this is where the marketing guy said the nosebleed started. Now, I want to show you the example from the telemetry we used to understand how people search. Now, with Exchange 2013, we introduced the fast search core to the product to deliver a very extensive, quick indexing engine and search experience for users. And we really doubled down on that by instrumenting Outlook, Outlook Web Access, Web Services, the fast stack, our storage engine query processor, to understand not just how fast queries were, but whether they returned any results and what kinds of characteristics represented users' queries. Now, there's a whole bunch of questions we've asked. And one of the simplest ones was, well, how do users start to search? What do they type in before they hit enter? Now, in Exchange Online, we have a really broad range of users. We have students in academia, we have information workers, task workers, managers, decision makers, and a lot of IT folks, folks in this audience included. Are there patterns through those users? And with a global audience, users writing and speaking over 100 languages, do you think that their searches look the same around the world? Does anyone have a guess? Are they the same? No, this guy said no. You get a shirt for saying no. Here you go. Oh, bad throw, good catch. Well, it turns out they kind of are. We analyzed somewhere close to 600 million queries over the course of a year and found that most people search for just one word. And just about everywhere. The way to read this is we see people do searches just about everywhere, start with 5 or 6 characters and hit enter. One regional difference that we see is in Asia, people speak in languages that have more symbols in them. People are doing 1 or 2 character searches. And you know, as you think about that, you say, geez, everyone is kind of doing the same thing. And as you look at the graph, you'll also see that there's a couple of bumps on the way. And what we figured out was that the users who are doing more advanced queries are typing in to or from, and then a name, just 5 or 6 characters, and then doing a search. Now, there's a huge variance, a huge range in the number of queries any one user does in a day, whether people are filers or inbox zero folks or pilers. As users get bigger mailboxes, they search proportionally with the content of their mailboxes. When users do a search and the results are coming back, whether they be 200, 300, 400, users never click on that go find more results from the server. Most queries are just generally small. They come back with 30 or 40 results. And what we see is users will repeat and iterate on the same searches over and over again, often spending minutes to find the right answer for what should be a simple query, 5, 6 characters. And with all of this, 1 in 8 of every query that users type return no results. And that's not a bug. They just don't match anything in the user's mailbox. So what do we do with this information? How do we use it? How do we build better products with it? Well, The design engineering team spent a lot of time understanding the science behind how users make decisions, how people think about things, how they react to the user interfaces. We know that the time it takes to make a decision is proportional to the number of choices a user might have. We know that to complete a task, the amount of time and effort increases with noise and decreases with more context and clarity. We know that it's a common tendency to place importance on the first result seen, even when they're wrong. And last, we know that people are better at recognizing the thing they want than remembering and trying to synthesize it. So we took that information and we focused on really three things in the area of search in Exchange 2016, and you might have seen in ELO 2016 yesterday. It really is about nailing the fundamentals. We spent a lot of time delivering significantly faster search results. Fast is more important than anything else. Most queries in Exchange 2016 with ELO 2016 will return in under a second, and in many cases, well under a second. What that means is the cost to iterate, to try new things, to add clauses to your search, doesn't have a penalty of taking a really long time to get those search results. That's really the foundation of everything we've done in search. What it's allowed us to do is change the architecture of the product such that when Outlook 2016 is connected to Exchange, it goes online to get search results. That means it uses the power of the server, not just what's cached and indexed locally, to get results. That's pretty wild, right? Outlook with a sync slider defaults to about a year of results. Some people will pick 2 years, but all of us will have mailboxes with data that stretches longer than that. Everyone has longer than 2 years of data in their mailbox, right? Yeah. Yeah. I have something back to 1997 when I started at Microsoft. I somehow managed to escape our retention policies. Now, what that gives users are more accurate and complete results. So the idea that you start up Outlook, you connect in, you can instantly start searching, get really fast results, independent of whether Outlook's still downloading stuff to the cache, only has a tiny cache on that portable device you have, or you have a massive mailbox online or in on-premises. The third area that we've invested is really in getting valuable results. And we tried a whole bunch of different things over the course of experimenting in Auth 365, providing dictionaries of keywords, industry-specific things. And in the end, nothing worked quite as well as delivering suggestions and context that are informed by data in the user's mailbox, the people they communicate with, and ultimately the queries that they've performed in the past. And so with 2016 in Outlook and OAuth, you get search suggestions, and those include also fuzzy matches. So what you'll see is when you start typing in the query box, you'll see a set of results that come back with terms that and keywords that come from content in the mailbox that the server's indexed. In addition, you also get matches of people that you communicate with regularly and frequently, including matches that have been misspelled. And I'm, with my name, frequently a, let's say, subject to people misspelling my name, but I do it just as often, I'm sure, as people do it to me. And so if you're off by one or two, you'll end up getting a proper suggestion that matches the name of the person you're trying to find. We've also added support for intelligent search refiners. That is, a way to filter and scope down the query and get really quick results showing the content in your mailbox that essentially pares down things to the most relevant thing, most relevant to you. So what you'll see are the top N folders, top five folders with content that match the query, the top N users or mailboxes or source email addresses that match the query with or without attachments and date range. So as you click through those, you'll quickly see updated results scoped to just there so that users don't have to go and figure out advanced query syntax or KQL or what have you for the discovery experts. Last but not least, you can search calendars in OAuth. I'm going to switch gears for a moment and talk about Outlook add-ins. In the past, we talked about add-ins as Outlook applications. In 2013, with the wave of Outlook and Exchange that we released, we introduced this concept of building HTML apps that could extend Outlook. And you might have seen a couple of examples of those with the Uber app and perhaps some of the DocuSign, Boomerang, Do.com stuff over the last few days and including last week at Build. These apps allow app developers and, in fact, a line of business developers to integrate with Outlook and deliver a fairly engaging experience. In 2016, what we've done is add additional integration points for those applications. The feedback we received from developers was that their apps weren't discoverable enough. In SP1, we added the support to extend composing mail, so you can go as a developer and use your HTML add-in to extend what was in the body of the message or extend content on the message. And in 2016, we've added some extension points in the ribbon, so when you're reading, consuming, or composing content, you'll be able to, as a developer, line of business, or professional, add extensions to Outlook, add extensions to the content of the message. The app bar, which was somewhat buried as you're dealing through conversations, was a fairly limited way for applications to interact with data and users. In 2016, body text will be highlighted, and the user can essentially hover over a click, and the applications will pop up over an inline content. And last but not least, applications can pop open a task pane to the right of the content during compose or read to extend content to the message. And I believe you guys saw a demo of this. Sorry. Now, one of the pieces that was kind of tough about extensibility for on-prem in the past was that an administrator had to take the application and provision it to users, or users had to go to the app store to load those applications into their thing. There was some admin control, some toughness there. 2016 introduces the ability to sideload applications. Essentially, you can mail an XML file or point a user to a share or website with an XML file to deploy that line of business application very, very quickly, allowing you to get apps out to the users and try them out as fast as you produce them. Now, that doesn't mean that we've changed any of the admin controls. The admin controls, as before, allow you to install apps in the marketplace.